think I'll be good on that.
Brrr, check it out. What's up, everybody? This is Chef Marcus Samuelson with my co-pilot, Jason Diakite. You're now listening to This Moment, the transatlantic bridge connecting Sweden to Harlem, New York, and all BIPOC communities across the globe. This week on This Moment, we bring back the one and only fantastic Negrito. But something has changed. He won another Grammy, nominated, but won once again. And we want to congratulate our friend. So we're talking to Fantastic Negrito about food, life, being on the West Coast, maybe start traveling again. All the adventures of Fantastic Negrito.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ladies and gentlemen, misters, misses, boys and girls, friends from all over the world, today we're connecting another city. We're reconnecting another spot. That is Oakland, California, and welcoming back a dear friend of the podcast, Mr. Fantastic Negrito. Welcome back, brother.
Man, thank you so much, man, for having me. It feels, I know we don't talk much, but there's something extremely visceral here. It's like I feel something when I see y'all. I don't know what, I like it a lot.
You're actually our first guest to come back for a reappearance. And that says a lot. That says a lot, brother. No, we love having you.
Yeah, we love having you. And I can't wait for, I mean, on a selfish note, I hope there will be a This Moment song featuring Jason and the Fantastic Negrito. Like, when's the song coming, man?
Well, listen, I'm going to tell y'all, that is now way more possible now that I'm free and I've launched my own record label right in West Oakland on 34th and San Pablo called Storefront Records. And now I don't have any more of that label stuff. And so
You're free in your creativity.
I'm free.
Can you explain for us a little bit, what does it take to set up? I mean, both of you guys have done indie labels based, you know, Jason with Juju, and now you setting this up. What's the journey of setting up a record company? Because I don't think most people know how to do that, what that means.
I ran my label from 99 to 2009, so I actually still don't, I don't have it, but I've been thinking about going indie again. But tell us, how is the journey like for you, Fantastic?
Man, I was telling you earlier that I had an anniversary, like my kids will turn 6. That's an anniversary when people got to know Fantastic Negrito. And NPR, the main ingredient, man, the main ingredient is you can't take no for an answer. Mm. And that's, I don't care how many plans you got loans, you got the bank, all no, it doesn't matter. If you cannot take no for an answer, then you must have a vision of what it is. If you can envision what it is, then you can make it happen. And I think the third step for me, I'm like, you got to raise support. That means brand partnership. That means, hey, the people walking by, how do they feel in West Oakland, an area that's marginalized? How do they feel about you being there? That's number two. And I think the third thing is, yeah, you got to be relentless raising some awareness and some money. Do a GoFundMe. I'm doing a GoFundMe. I feel like it's a great thing. What do I do after I won 3 Grammys in a row?
Yeah.
I better do something crazy. I better be radical. I better not win another one. That's what I say. And I remember telling the board that they looked at me like, I'd be like, nah, man, if I win another one, maybe I failed.
Well, take us in. Take a stop for a moment.
Yeah, yeah. We got to congratulate. First of all, for Marcus and me,
yes,
we got to say congratulations. Fantastic Negrito for the third Grammy in 3 years, right?
Well, it is the third three albums released.
Third three albums. That's such an accomplishment.
It's crazy.
Xavier, it's incredible. Congratulations, brother. And so well-deserved, man. You know,
but were you nervous this year? Were you like, tell me a little bit, because obviously it's not in the room anymore because of obviously the whole pandemic. But what was the feeling? Were you like celebrating with your friends and family? Like, what was the party feeling like?
Let me be honest, because I know sometimes I just keep performing. I'm trying to get out of that. Like, I don't want to posture. How did I really, really, really feel? How did I really feel? I felt this way. I won two in a row. And I would be online, you know, sometimes, and I saw that there was kind of a backlash. Like, man, this guy, him again? Why does he win again? And I'm like, yeah, I make good records. But anyway, so I thought, like, people were like, don't vote for him. Don't vote for him no matter what. So I thought, okay, maybe they'll do that this year. So my feeling was, I think I was cool till I sat down right here in this very same couch, and you're online, and they're going to announce it. I was like, I got really nervous. I was like, man, no, because I like to win. I'm competitive. We all three of us don't get to where we're going by not being competitive people. We have to be honest. People got to realize that out there that are trying to do stuff, that we is some competitive folks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was like, that's unbelievable. It may be unprecedented. I'm not sure. I don't follow up with that stuff. But
were you home or were you...
I was here. What I did is I bought the red carpet to West Oakland. I rented a red carpet. I got the tent. If you had walked in, you would have thought, oh, is this Hollywood? No, this is West Oakland, 34th and San Pablo.
And did you have friends and family around you, or how did that, you know, how did the room look?
Well, the thing is, I had, you know, only you can get about 50 people I want to follow the strict COVID, you know, regulations. So I got about 50 people, but it was all outdoor with tents. And then I was in this room by myself because you have to be online talking with the Grammy board. And so I'm sitting here online, you're waiting, and then you do the interviews just by staying online. And then I was able to get out there, but it was amazing. Like, just the people that we forget about, the people that are marginalized, the people that may have problems, mental issues, drugs, walking by, they made me feel great. Because they keep telling me every time I see them, like, man, thank you for bringing it here. Thank you for setting up your business here. It means everything to us, man. That felt great, man. You know, and I had friends that I grew up with that all came, and Dwayne Wiggins from Tony, people like that. People showed up and they're just happy. And I'm happy to be representing Oakland, California.
But speaking about that, right? Because you're in a legendary musical place, right? Rafael Sadiq, Tony, right around the corner. And obviously they were there.
Digital Underground, you know, Tupac.
Too Short, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Too Short, E-40, yeah.
E-40,
Black
all
Panthers,
of that stuff.
Hold on.
So obviously that's in the air. I mean, Jason and I get that feeling when we hear, as you know, when we're in Harlem, you feel like you're walking on Lenox or you're walking out on Clayton. You feel like you're walking in this crowd. Explain to our listeners about Oakland with that history, you know. Talk to us about that.
Well, I feel like with that history, when you're saying all those names, I'm like, yeah, you know, Raphael FaceTimed me. He was in L.A. E-40 FaceTimed me. I mean, it's, I really, really can't lie. I'm like, you know, artists like, man, I don't care, man, I don't care. But I really care about what those cats think. I really care about the architects of this. I'm doing a show with Taj Mahal, online show, I think, on Saturday. I care what he thinks.
That's amazing.
I care what he thinks. You know, I care what Buddy Guy thinks. I care what Bobby Rush thinks. I mean, they don't live here, but when you're talking about Oakland, like you're right. You're talking about the Black Panthers. You're talking about E-40. You're talking about Metallica, Tower of Power, Sly Stone, Digital Underground, where Tupac started. You're talking about some heavy hitters. So, you know, I feel it's scary sometimes. And I feel I'm like peeking that, am I doing okay?
Yeah, but recognition from your peers and love from your peers, of course, that means a lot, you know?
Yeah, and as Marcus, when he names some of them names, it's not even the peers, the gods.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
the gods of this thing.
But honestly, you know, Xavier, you're a genre-bending artist. I mean, we talked about it in our last conversation, you know, of what, you know, not even wanting to categorize your music more than calling it, you know, roots music, American roots music. Do you have any competition? You
know? I think my competition is excellence. I'm always striving for excellence, man. I listen to the great music that was done before me, and I feel small. But I call what I do. I got it, my own genre. I call it Black Roots music, and that's funk, rock, soul, punk, rhythm, blues, alligator shoes, foot stomps.
Gumbo stew.
Yeah, it's everything, you know? And that's, you know, and I think it's a beautiful thing. We all from the diaspora sitting in on this podcast, and our ancestors really made us rich like the Rockefellers. You know, they really left us such a beautiful legacy that we could, you know, live off of and feed our children off of. We're rich, Black folk rich.
But also when people think one thing that people get in your aura is don't be afraid to be original, because you are a true original and you've been able to move that from New York to California and also in different art forms, right? And that's, I think, is a huge inspiration. What you said, hey, don't take no for an answer. I completely hear you. You know what I mean? And these are some of these things that people said, well, how can you do what you're doing and what's the journey like? I'm like, no, don't exist. And I fully, it doesn't have a country. It doesn't have a state. It doesn't have a city. It's like you really push forward because sometimes you are the only person seeing what that journey is going to be like. May not even be the destiny but you got to keep holding on.
I think when I'm looking at y'all and when I'm talking to y'all, that's what all three of us have in common sitting here, our story of being these outsiders. You're kind of an alien. You from Africa, but raised by Swedish people, but now become an international cook. And you got an African-American father, Swedish mother. I think you said your mother.
No, American, white American mom, but lived and raised in Sweden. Yeah.
You know, and me, my insane background, like my father, since I talked to y'all, the whole world done changed on me. Anyways, I can't even get into it. I was in Atlanta shooting this show called Black Lightning, and they quarantined me in a hotel. And you know what I did? I went on Ancestry.com.
Oh. All right.
So much paperwork on who I really was. Man, I'm going to give you a summary in like a couple minutes. Only I don't want to give it all. Number one. My whole album is now is based on what I discovered, my new album. I discovered that my last name, which is long, is made up. It's not a real last name. My mother didn't know my father's name until I just told her a month ago. I just met a whole separate country of people related to me. Last time I talked to you, I didn't know that who they were. That's number one. Number two, there's a white woman. She's my seventh grandmother. Her name is Elizabeth Gallimore. I found the paperwork on her where she was dragged into court and charged with unlawfully cohabitating with a Negro slave belonging to a Mr. Henry Jones. So that started, that's another one. And the third, and so that's it. I'm like, what? I come from a line of people who didn't give a fuck.
Just in number one, it feels like there was a lot to unpack right there.
Just number one, man. But I would have never guessed it. And I have my dad, I look at it like this. I just want to say this. The album I'm writing is how we deal with the construct of white supremacy. which is pervasive as, you know what? That my father made that decision because he was intelligent, progressive, different, artistic, creative in 1905. That's all. I mean, he was like 33 years older than my mother. So he created a whole identity to combat that construct of white supremacy that severs your head and tells you, well, you're nothing actually. And so I understand why he did it.
And just talking about the name changing, you know, my dad and his three brothers and sisters were sent from Harlem in 1950. They were sent to Nigeria because my grandmother had married a Nigerian politician and journalist. So they were scooped up from Harlem, sent to Nigeria. She changed all their names to, she didn't want them to keep their slave names. And the name of the man that she had married, his last name was Ajulu Chukwu. So she changed all their last names to Ajulu Chukwu, and then they got different first names. Now in 1957, my dad was able to get back to, so after 7 years in Nigeria, he was 17, he got back to the United States, and he didn't want to, you know, because this Nigerian stepfather was mean to him or whatever. He went to a Malian man in Harlem named Papa Konate, and he gave him a new name. And that's how my dad became Madibuko Diakite. But he was born as Warren Robinson. And then became Bamali Ajulu Chukwu for 7 years, and then came back to Harlem at 17, and he was Madibuko Diakite. So since then, knowing that there's a, you know, like a name can be a cape. You can carry it, but you can also shed it. You know, I've always been Jason Diakite. I've never been anything else. But I could shed it and be something else. So when my dad came to Sweden, his phone bill would come in a whole, it would say MacArthur Robinson. And I'm like, who is this? He's like, I don't tell them my real name. You know, you crazy? And when I get, you see another bill, it'll be, you know, Jack Arthur, you know.
That's some black man survival kit right there.
Exactly, exactly. You know, like just it echoes so much of what you're saying about you do what you have to do to navigate being black in this kind of omnipotent white supremacy.
And maintain your dignity.
And sanity.
But Jason, I think that you've done that really well, right? Because out in the world in Scandinavia, Timbuktu is the starting point of the conversation, right? And now people might say Timbuktu Jason or Jason Timbuktu, but it's really Timbuktu. So as an artist, you both have these great names that you can sort of go to, and then you can take it off when you are living your personal life. And I do think there's something really brilliant about that, because it's almost like Kiss before the makeup came off, right? It's a little bit like, okay, we can live our experiences in a different way.
I think you said it right, Jason, when you said sanity, mental health, crucial, which is really what Have You Lost Your Mind Yet was all about. I mean, I was writing about mental health and this navigating through the maze of just living in a world of followers and likes, so to speak. Like, how do we deal with that? It's just as normal people.
Xavier, do you meditate, or what do you do in terms of keeping your mental health in check? Is there a process that you go through?
Well, I think one of the things that I do, I don't know if both of y'all can relate to this, is I keep the same friends that I've had for the past 30, 40 years. That's very important. I'm always, and I leave the word I'm trying to say because I want to be polite. Ninja, please. we need, hey, we need those friends.
That can check you. That can check you beyond all potential big-headedness, whatever.
Yeah, and I think also I'm a huge, you know, believer of eating right and yoga. I mean, you guys know I live on my farm, Revolution Plantation. Mm-hmm. That means everything to me. Just, I feel like when you're growing a plant, and you're looking at that plant grow, and that plant provides for you and your family. I mean, I haven't bought greens in years.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. I'd grow so much food on my little farm. That is that's how I stay grounded. I get my hands into that soil and reconnect with that and feel that power and that energy. And I think there's even a science to your hands being in the soil. But those are the things that I do, you know?
Mm. Yeah, you know, going through the pandemic, we've spent a lot of time and we live in Stockholm, which is a city. It's a small city for being a capital of a country, but yet and still, you know, surrounded by concrete and asphalt. And one of the main kind of energy refill or sources of energy through the pandemic, when we can't have our regular social gatherings, concerts, what have you, for me has been just being in the forest. I also have a 2.5-year-old, so she loves being in the forest.
Nice.
And I kind of influenced by my mom, who said that, you know, you have to go tree bathing. Nice. Right? You have to go out among the trees. You actually have to hug the trees to get it'll make your body release, you know, energy. And they're giving you things when you're amongst the trees. And you know, my mom is very, very heavy on the spiritual side, but I'm a little more skeptical, I guess. But that's one that I do believe. You know, there's something soothing about, and the same thing as putting your hands in the earth, right? Your hands in the dirt is grounding you to you know, the earth mother in some primordial way.
Absolutely, man. When I was, you know, I was in a coma 3 weeks. And, you know, I had to learn how to walk again. I remember, like, I walked like a zombie. And I remember the nurses would come from the hospital to take me to walk. You know, you have to walk to the mailbox today. Okay, good. You did good. Yeah. So what I would do when I was walking, I'd be like, something told me in that moment of walking like Frankenstein, I had to go touch this tree. And I remember I got over there and I just got onto the tree and started crying. Mm. I never forget that moment. It was in L.A., but I had to feel that tree, man, because I was so broken and I was so devastated physically by this accident. And the second thing I wanted to say is I think is Black folks, African Americans in particular, we need to get back into that soil, because that in our subconscious is our point of trauma. And I may have said that to y'all before, but I feel like for Black folks, it's so important to get back into that thing that traumatized us, because the thing that that's why, you know, we can turn it around and make it amazing, and it can heal us.
Maybe that's one of the continuing traumas of slavery is the fact that it also robs us of the part of the history where the people stolen from Africa were actually brought their agricultural skills and prowess to America, not only agricultural, but carpentry, and I'm sure blacksmithing and weaving. And of course, as the world knows, singing songs, you know, singing songs and dancing dances. And that major kind of contribution on all those, or those many contributions, are kind of sometimes, if not forgotten, but it seems like slavery puts just this bloody blanket over all of that.
Well, it robs you of worth, right? Physical worth and mental worth. You know what I mean?
I mean, when that becomes our story.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't become the story that never gets told, right? Because, you know, the told story that always gets told is in the person that sort of drives the narrative and so on. And I think that so much of our lives were anonymous lives, and now we have an opportunity to live visible lives. And, you know, just to go back to what your mom said, Jason, you know, when Maya's mom comes to New York, you know, they live out on a big farm, a lot of land in Ethiopia, in the middle of Ethiopia. So she's surrounded, like, nature is everything. She's surrounded by coffee, avocado, Ayurveda, all of these different things. Mm. When she comes to New York, first thing she does is she goes to the park across the street. And she puts her hand on and kisses the little mountain. She kisses the trees. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, her connectivity is not necessary to the streets or to the buildings. That means nothing to her. And so I do think that idea of nature, there is something there that is very spiritual. You know, New York City wouldn't be New York without its park. It wouldn't even survive as a city. We would drive each other crazy. Imagine you take Central Park out, you take Prospect Park out, you take all these amazing parks, Marcus Garvey Park out, and just put buildings up. We wouldn't exist. We would destroy each other.
I agree. No, that's very real, man. That's it's such an important part. The mental health is just plants and then cooking. I mean, you can relate to that. Marcus, well, I have an 11-year-old who, and thank you so much for the cookbook, because now he's into it now. Now I'm like, put that computer down, man. And he's into the cookbook. So pretty soon, I'll be tagging something that he made. He's in there. He's just reading it. So I'm really grateful that you have that book.
But Jason, you know this, and Xavier, we talk about this. So much of what we did and are doing naturally is now coming back, and we have to relearn it. Like this idea of black farmers. We were the farmers. Do you know what I mean? There was Native American farmers and there were black farmers, right? Then people think like, oh, the journey of black chefs. We were the cooks. Do you know what I mean? We were the anonymous cooks. And we were the domestic. We were all of that. And then you talk about the things that were robbed that you will never hear about. I'll tell you a story. And Jason, you know about this story. Mr. Nearest Green, he's the person that came up the recipe for Jack Daniels. But he was a slave, and he didn't get one dime for it. What does that do, right? It changed the trajectory of worth. If he would have got 10 cents on the dollar for every bottle of Jack Daniels, think about the wealth for his family, but not only the family wealth. Other black people community. Would have looked into this field as, oh, there's a worth there. So, you know, when the history gets so rewritten of reality, our worth, what we should go into, gets confused. People say stuff like, oh, how come there's no black farmers? This is the field that we completely had. We just weren't called farmers. We were called slaves. And when that land owning, when the land that we were supposed to be owning, that we never got, it changed the trajectory. So I do think that we're still searching for those places and those places that are supposed to be ours and we're supposed to be back into. So it's going to take a long time. And it's not just black people are doing it. You see that in Asian American communities. You see that in Latinx. And you see it in all what we call others.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hello, this is Fantastic Negrito, and you are listening to This Moment.
Xavier, tell us, what's a typical Fantastic Negrito meal? Like, what do you throw down when you've harvested?
I want to say this one thing, that we have a massive growing coalition of black farmers in Oakland, huge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are women, a lot of them. So I just wanted to say that just to give a shout out to all the black farmers in Oakland, California. Mm-hmm. What I want to say, what do I eat, man? I always laugh at myself. I'm like, gosh, I'm an old man now. I eat like an old man. I eat very simple, very basic, no, not too spicy. I like greens and fish, and I keep it very simple. I like to eat to feel good and to feel alive. I love eating the greens from my garden. It almost feels like it's a drug. I'm eating them, and it feels like this super energetic thing is happening. I love love a lot of Japanese food because it's simple. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, I was much braver, man. I ate everything, but I don't know what happened. Why I can't handle such a complex or fancy diet anymore. I just like simple.
Jason, is there a city that you go to when you tour where you like get excited about? Because I know, for example, that you used to love to tour in Umeå because the audience was always great. But is there a city you get excited about because, the food's going to be great here? Is there a city we should know about in Scandinavia, Jason?
I would say right now, Copenhagen, or for the past like 10 years, Copenhagen. I know, Xavier, you've been there. Marcus, you've been there many, many times, because Sweden has a rigidity, as you know. It's a very organized society. It's very kind of clean, structured, and I dare say pretty square society. Whereas the Danes are, for better or for worse, are a little more loose, you know? And that means, you know, if you want to set up a restaurant in a bike shed or in a broken down building that should be torn down, but a condemned building, you're actually allowed to do that, which you aren't really in Sweden. So there's been a lot of like innovative stuff going on in Denmark, Marcus.
Nice.
When it comes to food, when it comes to music, not as much, not as progressive. And I guess that's just how the cookie crumbles, that, you know, there's certain lanes where a culture will be more progressive and then in other lanes, maybe a little less progressive. I don't know. Also, I haven't been up on like Danish hip hop music for a couple of years, but all through the 90s, since I'm from the south of Sweden, from Lund, the nearest kind of metropolis to go to get that inspiration, basically to hear the music and to, when I could afford to buy like records, when I would hear that Tribe Called Quest had come out with a new album, it could take 4 months before that album was even available in Scandinavia. Copenhagen was the first place to go look. And so Copenhagen was really a formative spot for me all through the 90s, you know.
Xavier, what about you? What's a city? What's a place that you look forward to? And like, the food is dope here and the music scene is great and, you know.
Man, I tell you, man, I've had some weird experiences, bro. I mean, I have some ones that can get you in trouble as a married man. You know, I have some ones, and I'm like, I'm scared of those places. And I don't want to say them, but I do like them. But I'm scared, but I do like them.
But you're scared.
But I'm scared, yeah. Listen, I feel like this, man, you know. I've been shocked let me just say it. I love Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm just going to say it like that. I'm just going to leave it like that. I'm going to let everybody, why do I love that? The food is amazing. The people are beautiful. They may not have a lot, but they're warm. And then there's a lot of social movements happening there that really shocked me. And I was like, wow, this is happening here. I'd say that place is great to go to. I think a place like with food, I mean, come on, man. You can't hate on Italy. Why is it so good? It's just simple, basic ingredients. So I love that. And I love Japan. I said that food is that's in my blood. I just get everything that they cook, I love. And one place, I'll say one of the places that surprised me in terms of food, that shocked me. I went to a place that I played in this huge festival in Greece, and it was in Larissa, Greece. Mm-hmm. And they were like, man, we've been listening to your music for about 2 weeks, and now we prepared this meal for your music, how we felt. And man, it was like, hey, my people are from down south. So I've had pig feet and all that, but this pig feet I had in Greece was unbelievable. It was an octopus, and it was just so exotic, and I love that. Cyprus, there's just so many, in terms of food, all these places coming to my head, though, you would never think of those places for food. At least I wouldn't. Greece, Cyprus, Brazil.
Another one I got to drop on y'all is New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as for me, as far as like, I mean, the food is, of course, amazing, and there's such deep history, but the roots music that's played on, you know, any given night on Frenchman Street is just, to me, and that the fact that you see young people still playing, you know, the roots instruments, playing, you know, you'll see six trombone players, you know.
No, fat young, second line, sorry.
Yeah, young cats still. And then the next day you'll be in another part of town and you'll be like, hey, I recognize that trombone player from 2 days ago. I saw him on Frenchman Street.
And hip-hop. The
doing
hip-hop
the rounds.
Scene. And the hip-hop scene, you know, it's been, you know, Manny and everybody's been throwing down there for a long,
Big
long,
Frida.
Long time.
Exactly. Shout out to Big Frida, you know.
Don't forget Tank and the Bangers, man. They
I
are.
Love Tank and the Bangers.
I'm not saying that because we made a record together either, but I'm saying she's one of the most talented.
She's, the, I mean, she's also really genre. I mean, she mixes in storytelling, emceeing and singing and just like, and using her voice as an instrument. She's amazing.
She's amazing. Yeah. So
I gotta hold a flag up for, which I thought maybe Xavier would say, but you know, for food, LA, man. There's something in LA in terms of, there's a documentary called City of Gold by this incredible food critic that wrote for the LA Times forever, Jonathan Gold. He passed away 2 years ago now. But I just love, you can go to a place like San Gabriel Valley and it's Chinese food, Sichuan food, better than anywhere else, right? I'm not talking about now like the fancy places. I'm talking about you can get Afghan food. You can get food from, of course, Persian food. You know, you can go down to these little...
K-Town.
Yeah, K-Town, of course. I'm getting to little Ethiopia. Of course, you can't jump it. You can't jump it. You know, you got to, you know, skate down.
Little Addis.
Little Addis, exactly.
I used to live there, man. I used to eat there, damn near, every day. Kitfu. Like religiously, but yeah, you're right. I think because LA, it's probably like a beautiful wife you have that you just see her every day. I lived there for so long, I take it for granted, but you're right. I mean, LA has, and my boy Malcolm Spellman, who's like kind of my creative partner, he always, we always argue about that, but yeah, you're right. It's like, he's like, LA, and I'm like, yeah, man. You're right. LA definitely has. You can go anywhere, you're right, and get anything.
And it's not just, don't get me wrong, that this is not about restaurant eating. These are anything from food trucks to restaurant to outdoor market. If you've never done it in your life, if you could ever just go to one of the farmers market in Venice or in Santa Monica on a weekend, it's one of the biggest luxury and privileges in your life. Just walking around and looking at vegetables and fruits in the height of its season. And just, you know, for me, you know.
Oliviera Street.
Yes.
Man, I lived Oliviera Street downtown, all the Mexican and La Flora Blanca, the El Salvadorian food. I mean, I lived in Marina del Rey, and I'm like, yeah, I'm in Marina del Rey, I'm kicking it. But then I was just like, after a few years, I was like, I'm sad and I'm depressed. Why? Man, I moved to South Central. Yes. I'm like, this is where I feel something here, more kindred. I had grown up in Oakland, so I knew the politics. And I knew, like, I was wearing these jackets. Ain't nobody gonna mess with me. I'm not a gangbanger. I'm a weirdo. You know what I mean? So I lived there, and I tell you, the food experience living in the Latin American communities, man, it was unbelievable. Yes. So yeah, let's give it up to LA. Yeah, just Peruvian food, you know, and then you can get Mexican food truck like you're talking about. Then you got a Salvador, you get pupusas.
Yes.
It was unbelievable. You're right, man. I just take LA for granted.
And I don't know if Jason has been there, but I assume you've been there, Xavier. Like, because right down there, maybe Jason has been there too. Grand Central Market is his place.
I have not been, actually.
Oh my God. Next time you come to go to LA. So it's downtown LA, which is really where we used to be the Garment Street, and it's really working class and beautiful. And of course, in the center of this is this like over 100-year-old market called Grand Central Market, where Mexican is right next to the El Salvadorian place, next to the hipster place, because it's now hip, right? But for me, we can do, 2 hours there, and I feel good afterwards. And it's just honest place.
But Xavier, you know, I heard you say you're already making a new album. Tell us a bit about the album. What are your thoughts? Where are you in the process? What are you? Is it a continuation? Are you taking a left turn? What are you? You know, what are you looking at?
I got a name for this album, and I can't say it to anybody. I was gonna name it "Freedom is Terrifying" because that's what it feels like. Freedom is a bit terrifying. I feel like I wanted to say if you. You know, winning awards, what it makes me do is I'm not making a left. I'm getting into a spaceship and I'm launching off into another world. You know what I mean? That's how I'm approaching this album. And I always, you know, the great thing about, you know, blues, I may not play 12-bar blues, but I love storytelling. And I think that it's about my own story. I'm not who I thought I was. And I've gone into I'm into the 1500s right now in my family, which is like, what? Yeah, I'm in the 1500s, and there's a huge story there. And it's not just black and white. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of little gray areas, and things are not really as they're presented. And I think I may be speaking for all of us here that, you know, you may not know a lot of things, but when you find them out, man, it can either liberate you or make you bitter.
Wow.
And I think this record is about discovering. I'm going to discover who I am through the process. It's like this metamorphosis of like my name, my ancestry. I thought I was this person. I'm not. I got my roots go like very far back. I'm like, how do we black people? How am I in the 1500s? There's a reason why I'm there. I found a route. I found pictures, documents I'm writing about. Everything that I found, I did not know who I was. But I'm definitely taking chances more sonically. I just don't want... We just got to bust out of this thing, man. The pandemic drove us...
How do you tap into that original space of creativity that you know, that's well, that you're fetching this water from, that you're turning into this, you know, very original music? You know, I feel like I know we touched on it in our last conversation, but I still feel like a lot needs to be said on it. You know, in today's age where not only music, but everything is so formatted and it's drawn together. And like, you know, we're like flocks of birds, you know, flying in one direction one day. And then the next day, well, lead bird flies to the right, then everybody goes to the right. You know, politically, I'm sure this is the same in food, Marcus. You know, how do you stay free from the trends?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that is very important, and I don't want to talk so use bad words, but I have to. Not giving a fuck is the main ingredient. You have to not give a fuck. You have to really not give a fuck. Like, I don't care if I don't have X amount of followers. I don't care. A publicist or somebody's telling you something, you have to be like, I don't care. I believe in this. There's some. What happened to what we believed in? You have to create.
Yeah, right.
You have to create like you're 17 with the wisdom of a grandfather. Now, remember when we were 17? Remember that kid? He could do anything. man, I'm going to try this. Yeah. Let me try this. But then someone came along and said, no. So I just try to stay in touch with that 17-year-old with the wisdom of a grandpa and stand down in 34th and San Pablo. Man, that's reality.
That's, hey, a that's great, reality. Someone I love just, that. That's a
someone
great.
Came right in front of here and just stripped naked yesterday. Mm. I just like, there it is. Mm. That's our. She was like, I think I'm going to strip
there
naked.
It is.
Look, I mean,
yeah,
happens down here. I think
it's free.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a little bit crazy, but yeah, but there's something about being down here, and you're down here with just people. They're going through all kinds of stuff, and I enjoy that. No, I enjoy being in that environment because guess what? I'm going through all kinds of stuff too.
I thought that's a really good advice, actually, with the curiosity and the mindset of a 17-year-old, but also with the know-how of a grandpa, because especially as men, it takes us a while to figure out where we're going and where is our journey taking us. And I work hard on shutting out stuff. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like really, when I create, I can't look at, I love speaking to you guys, musicians and other creatives, because that gives me a lot of creativity, but not necessarily with chefs, because I really want to stay in my own space. And I think that the biggest gift that I have is Africa. The blessings of being black is that incredible pot of diamonds, you know, in terms of food, you know, I'll just look
that's
at it.
That's your mental wealth.
Yes.
That's and your so mental wealth.
Don't talk
right
to
there.
Me. You're disturbing me right now. I'm digging. Do you know what I mean? I'm finding, I'm looking for my soursop. I'm looking for my sea moss, whatever it might be. You know what I mean? So I always I can't afford to go to everything. I can't afford to do all this stuff because I really got to be in my own head on that. So I could be very, like, that's the thing. Like, you can't really afford to be on another page because you really got to do you, you know?
I love that.
You know?
I'm in love with, that's just, you slammed from the free throw line, man. Yeah. When you said, man, that's our wealth, man. That's our money. You know, people like, everybody else knows that except us, our community a lot of time. That is all Africa left us, everything left of music, food, knowledge, wisdom, fashion, style, swag, athleticism, intelligence, philosophy, Africa.
Guys, listen, it's 8:45 in Stockholm, and the grocery store closes in 15 minutes.
You got to do it
right. I got to buy milk and porridge for my daughter's breakfast tomorrow.
Go. You better get
I love talking to you two.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I love listening to you two, building and learning. You know, it's...
Thank you.
Man, it's an honor to be in conversation with the both of you. And consider this your home, Xavier.
And congrats for the third Grammy in a row. All
right. Boom.
Hey, listen, on the new album, I'm coming here. I'm going to announce a new album on this show. Make sure I do that. Because it's going to flip y'all wigs back when I say this name.
And listen, okay, so, and just because I'm about to head out the door, we have an ask of you, Xavier.
Yes.
You know, we have an ask. I'm just going to lay it out there. You know, we would like you to compose, it doesn't have to be a long piece of music, but our theme, you know, the theme music for this moment. Yes. You know, nobody can do it better than you, bro.
Consider it done. Thank and also, I'm saying to Adu, who's in this room, Adu, make sure I want to start a SoundCloud too, because they put it back in my head so me and Jason can get on some music together.
Yeah.
I just need help. I got it sitting there. I just need Adu. So we're going to blame Adu for everything.
The universe has a plan.
Yeah, and I got it. I just got to send it to you. I'm like, I got this idea. Mm.
And Xavier, soon, in about 4 or 5 months, Jason's going to be in the States anyway, so we make sure that
we wherever you are, I'm
we'll
coming.
Do it. All right?
I got to get away from my wife, so make sure you get the plan now. I'm telling you. We got to go to New York for 7 days. We got to do it.
Email is coming right now. It's coming right now.
Yeah, man.
One love.
Love you guys.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have suggestions, thoughts, stories you want to share, email us at thismomentpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, This Moment Podcast, and we will be back next week. Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.